This is Cast of Wonders, the young adult fiction podcast featuring stories of the fantastic. Episode 289 for January 28th, 2018. Welcome. I'm your editor, Marguerite Kenner. Every year in January, Cast of Wonders highlights some of our favorite episodes from the previous years. It's a great chance for us to take a bit of a break and let you, our listeners, catch up on any missed back episodes with new commentary from a different member of the crew. The only editorial prerogative I exercise here at Cast of Wonders is getting to pick my story last. That's because, to a large extent, they're all my favorites. Choosing a single favorite seems an impossible task every year, and I look forward to hearing everyone else's selections each time as much as I hope you do. My staff pick from 2017 is Blood and Water by Jason Kimball, which originally aired on May 29th, 2017 as episode 250. Jason Kimball left the tornadoes of Michigan for the hurricanes of Florida because spinning air is better when it's warm. He lives there with his finally legal husband. His most recent work appears or is forthcoming in Betwixt, The Sockdolager, Clockwork Phoenix 5, and Escape Pod. You can find more of his nattering at his website, Process Wonk, or on Twitter, which will be linked for you in the show notes. Your narrator, Paul Cram, is a scrappy actor whose character in movies always seems to be the one that dies. His latest role in Anniversary has him awake at night seeing things that no one wants to admit are happening. While Paul still considers his voice to be somewhat new to the world of audiobooks, he has a few full-length novels under his belt, including the love story Flirting with Death, set against the beauty of Lake Michigan and the zombie apocalypse. When not acting, Paul can be found in the woods of Minnesota, arguing pop culture with his little brother. And now, we've a tale to tell.
Blood and Water by Jason Kimball, narrated by Paul Cram. The year we turned 19, the boy I loved disappeared under the waves of Lake Michigan, but he didn't die. I never told anyone that he was alive, that I loved him, that he... My fingertip goes white as I smash down on the delete key and the cursor devours my words. The broken swimming trophy lies sideways on the kitchen table. I stare at it as I dial, ignore the cat meowing, exiled, on the other side of the door. I count the rings of the phone at my ear. 7 rings. For the dwarf lords in their halls of stone. Before Mr. Grevier picks up. "Why are you calling, Mike?" Grevier says. "It's about a book," I say. "I think that I loaned it to Andy before..." That wasn't his name. I can't decide if the ice sheathing Mr. Grevier's voice is better or worse than his scalding anger at the funeral. "It's special. A first edition. Return of the King. My mother..." "So special. It took you 5 years to notice it missing?" "It's just..." I turn the gilded swimmer in my hand. "I told you when he died, Michael. You're not welcome here. Live without the book. I'm living without a whole lot more." Mr. Grevier hangs up. The clouds outside hang low and white. Andy could have told me if it was going to rain. 5 years, and I still can't tell Mr. Grevier the truth. Whatever that is. I shuffle to the other room, sit down at my computer. I was trying to write it again when the cat broke Andy's trophy. 1... for the Dark Lord on his dark throne. More time. I keep getting stuck trying to start at the end, but that won't work. You can't know him backwards. Andy only makes sense if you start when we were kids. I knew Andy was special, our first day at the beach. We were 10. It was a yellow flag day at Lake Michigan. Red flags meant Mom turned the car around. The waves were too violent for swimming. Green flags, the lake sat flat and went nowhere. When the waves bucked, but not so much everyone had to stay out, yellow flags waved over the beach. Perfect for a super jump. Swim out to the sandbar and wait. When those big rolls of water come in, time it just right, and the wave lifts you all in a rush, then drops you back onto the sandbar. I taught Andy the super jump. He sank under the first few times, and I laughed when he came up sputtering. At, not with. It was one of the few times Andy truly needed something from me, and I laughed at him. For a minute or so, I wasn't the most awkward person in my life. There was a desperation in the way he practiced jumping. His healthy lips turned blue, and his thin chest heaved. Still, he stayed as long as my mom would let us. 2 weeks later, Andy had redefined the super jump. For me, it meant riding the wave on its rise and fall. At best, I started to come out of the wave at the top, the breeze a chill kiss along the waist of my suit. But the wave always kept hold of my legs. Even good jumps ended with the waves sucking me back down. Andy actually escaped at the wave's crest. The afternoon sun wobbled out over the lake, and he jumped after it. He flew out of the wave, his whole body in the air. He looked like a gull, thin wings spread wide. He came back down straight into the top of the next wave, laughing, wet hair spiked and mussed. "Here comes another." Andy hunched to catch it. I only pushed off enough to keep my head above water. The tide drove me towards shore. I watched Andy. Lobbed up out of the water and high into the air, arms spread, screeching another laugh. I was suddenly fascinated by his wet shoulder blades and the sunlight flashing off them.
"What are you doing back there?"
Andy asked.
"Just bad timing."
I jumped the next few waves to meet him, each time trying to duplicate Andy's feat. Maybe catch the wave sooner, or do a little run before pushing off, or none of it worked. I couldn't explain current and gravity and inertia at 10 years old, but I knew that Andy had broken the rules with a grace I coveted.
"How are you doing that?"
I asked.
"What?"
The two of us started up the next wave. Andy broke out at the top. He did a flip this time, like a dolphin.
"How do you get out to the air?"
Andy wrinkled his nose and took the next wave the same way I did. He stopped.
"Just what?" I prodded. "I showed you how to jump. You've got to give back." "Let me..."
Andy shot out from the next wave to the cooling afternoon air. Droplets made a halo of light around him. When he came down, he said,
"It's not me. It's the wave, the water. If you don't want to tell me..."
I huffed.
"Michael,"
he said, grabbing my wrist. His grip was warm after the breeze on my wet skin. He spun me out to face the lake.
"The water knows, not me."
Andy pointed to where we couldn't see the lake end.
"This is some weird mountain thing, isn't it?"
I said, pulling away.
Andy cocked his head. "You can't feel it?"
he asked, his eyes fogged over as I spoke.
"Andy, people just don't do that. They don't jump out of waves. Teach me? I promise not to tell."
He looked over the waves, eyes locked on something I couldn't see. He shivered once, though the wind had stopped gusting. Then he stilled.
"I don't think I can do it anymore, Michael."
He crossed his arms over his chest, rubbed his smooth hands over his small biceps, refused to look me in the eye.
"It's lost now."
Andy lost his name because of me, too. The day we met, we were making bookmarks with our names on them in homeroom. When the new boy joined, Mrs. Kreitz made him say his name.
Then, where he came from, how he got here.
What kind of stupid name is that?
Jeff Giblet asked at lunch. Jeff's yes boys loomed around, looking for a response, giggling. I sat a little farther down the table, trying to avoid notice. The new boy looked up from his tray and smiled with fine white teeth. His color struck me, because the only place I'd seen a tan so even and smooth was television. Ours was not a diverse community. He took the question seriously, missed the insult planted squarely in its middle.
In English, Andy said, it means Andy,
I said.
His name means Andy.
It was the only thing I remembered from homeroom. He came from the Andes. I still don't know why I spoke up. He looked like someone had airbrushed over every imperfection. Perfect people don't need saviors, right? But his smile seemed like something that needed protection.
How would you know?
Jeff demanded, turning his bullish frame and his entourage on me.
Read a book, I answered. Oh, I forgot. Your mommy still does that for you. Dumbass,
Jeff returned. His courtiers seemed sated with the comeback. He left with his head up. My face burned as courage drained out of me. My fingers shook until the new boy's voice broke the silence.
Is it so hard to say? Excuse me? My name. But Andy, in American name.
He turned his smile on me. A simultaneously nerve-wracking and soothing experience. He understood that I had done something for him, but the wrinkle between his eyebrows told me he couldn't quite fathom the significance.
You don't know, I told him. I guess you couldn't, but you have to be careful about sticking out. It's teachers like it, but no one else. And that is important?
Totally,
I said.
The best thing is popular, but it's lots easier to just stay out of the way.
Such was our beginning. I taught Andy what I knew about strategic invisibility, the most effective of public school defense tactics, and I thought I'd done him a favor. He knew how to keep out of people's way, knew the key word, same. I'd meant to help him survive. But all I had done when I named Andy was tie the line that would drag him under. The Y had open swim, no laps, no lanes, 3 nights a week. When we were 14, on Wednesdays, we came to play Marco Polo. Andy found the notion of man-made pools unnerving, but I convinced him pools were normal.
I'm first,
Andy asked, moving out of the shallow end. There were only 3 other kids in the pool, all too little for the deep end, so that's where we stationed ourselves.
Of course, it's the only way I ever get to not be it.
Andy closed his eyes and started spinning, counted to 100. When he finished, I was holding on under the diving board.
Marco! Polo!
Andy turned to the sound, but didn't start toward it. I slid out to the left, hands below the surface, water lapped quietly under my chin.
Marco! Polo!
Andy swam a little closer and stopped, bobbing. I moved straight in. This was it. For once, I was going to stump Andy.
Marco! Polo!
I sucked in air and shot straight down. I had 15 seconds before Andy could call Marco again. I giggled underwater. In the deep end, I could swim right underneath him. The current slid across my belly as I spun in the water. I looked up through my goggles at where Andy would be treading water. Andy wasn't treading water. He wasn't swimming at all. I floated up behind him. Andy was standing upright, though neck deep, in the water. His legs and arms were still. The water lapped at his chin, but he stood as if there was some invisible shelf supporting him. Andy's body bobbed with the water, but he didn't kick or flail. There was nothing to support him but another 5 feet of water. I never told anyone else about the water shelf. I was the only one who saw, like the wave jumping. And like the waves, I knew Andy couldn't explain. If I let him see that this was unique, he would throw it away like the waves and his name. But I knew it made Andy special. I thought seeing it happen made me special too. In high school, Andy was a star. He swam varsity as a freshman, had grown into wide shoulders and a square chin. He was everything I wasn't. Right after my 18th birthday, Andy collapsed at a swim meet. When the gun went off, there was no question who would win. But then he was being pulled out of the pool, lying on the tile. I couldn't see his chest rise at first. In a sustained, low-oxygen environment, like, yes, the Andes, people often start making extra red blood cells to help carry what oxygen they get. More blood cells means thicker blood, sometimes too thick for a heart to pump. It's how Andy's real father died, why Mr. Gravier adopted him. They call it severe polycythemia. All that controlled breathing from swimming, the doctor said, provoked Andy's natural tendency for it. They bleed me too, he told me when I finally spoke with him. I had kept busy filling out college applications and taking SATs and ACTs, avoiding my best friend. That night, for the first time in years, Andy invited me for a sleepover. When neither of us spoke, I could hear the house settling. Bleed you? I thought doctors stopped doing that forever ago. It's making a comeback, Andy said, smiling. His hair was oily and his chest sunken. Andy's white sheets set off the bluish tinge to his skin. Does it help? I asked. They sit leeches on me, Michael. They take away what my heart spent a lifetime pushing through me to feed parasites. No, would have worked fine. I always felt nervous when Andy talked like that, like some kind of oracle. I leaned over in my chair and picked up my backpack, a threadbare nylon monster that refused to die. I got you something. Andy propped himself up on the pillows. Give. I guess it's more of a loan. Mom would kill me if she knew, but I pulled out Return of the King. The pages were yellow and musty, but the print was clear, and I thought the smell added to the read. Andy took the book gingerly and ran his fingers under the title. It's one of the early ones, isn't it? Actually, it's the last book? No, this story. It's one of the early fantasy novels? I leaned back in my chair, not quite sure what I was hearing in Andy's voice. Well, yeah, it's old. And I mean, I know you're not really into this kind of thing, and this is actually the end, but I totally think you can follow it if... You, I trust. Andy laid his hand on my forearm. You say I'll like. Thanks. Sure. I crossed my arms and shrugged, suddenly warm. Sometimes it unnerved me, the way Andy didn't need space when we were together. Whenever you get time to read it, I already did. I've got the time, I nodded, not sure if it was a joke. So, what now? I want to sneak out tonight. Andy shoved his covers off his legs. He'd developed knobby knees. It's going to rain. Andy dug out a black t-shirt and a dark pair of jeans. Andy, my mom's addicted to the TV8 weatherman. If there was rain coming, she'd never let me out of the house without an umbrella. Andy squeezed his head through the hole of the t-shirt. The fabric and his hair both pulled tight and then popped loose after his ears made it past the collar. An act which took more effort than it should have. Do you know how long it's been since I touched real water, Michael? I was going to talk to you about showering, but I didn't want to upset. No, Andy ignored the opening for more banter. He flopped onto his back to slide on baggy jeans that had hugged him tight last winter. I mean real water, not that chlorinated recycled stuff they pipe into the sink and the shower, or that stagnant muck I had to put up with in the pool.
He stood and cinched his belt to the last hole.
I thought you liked swimming, I said.
Swim team's just going in circles in a dead, oversized basin. I only did it because it kept my blood pumping. There wasn't time for the beach, or it was too cold, or whatever excuse we came up with. I had to do something.
He turned to me as I battled the zipper on my backpack closed.
Just don't step on the third or seventh step. Stay to the right on the ninth, and Dad won't hear a creak.
We went to the park. Night made everything shades of blue. The seesaw, with the paint chipped off its corner, the cement pipes set like a maze, the tarnished jungle gym. Some of them were navy, others indigo, deep sea, cornflower.
I'm not any good at this, I said.
I was trying to get some height on the swing set, but kept dragging my feet.
That's because you believed Shelley Suzanne when she told you her second cousin went so fast he flipped all the way over the bar.
The night was as quiet as Andy's basement had been. I watched him clear the ground with each swing and climb higher.
Here I come, Andy announced as he swung down past me, then up and forward again.
He topped out even with the bar. The seat twisted and the chain went slack, clanked against itself as he jumped. He arched out over the trampled playground grass, arms and legs spread wide. He lost his balance on the landing and rolled forward. By the time I got to him, he was brushing the grass and dirt off his elbow. The worry vein on my temple twitched.
I forgot how fun that was.
Andy wiped at his forehead and left behind a wet purple smear. He studied the blood as he rubbed it between his fingers.
At least we don't have to worry about clotting.
He flashed me a smile, shaded pastel by the night.
So,
I said, shoving my hands in my pockets and scanning the playground for something that didn't involve his illness.
Where's that rain?
Andy walked up to the seesaw as if it were a plank.
I was just about to tell you. It's here.
He looked up, still smiling, and pointed to the sky. I looked up too, as the water streamed down. Andy hooted his triumph. The seesaw balanced beneath him. He wiggled his fingers in the air above his head, and I knew he'd called the rain to him, as sure as I could call my dog. I was never as elated by dog kisses as Andy looked in the rain. Andy rubbed the water across his face like he was finally and for the first time coming clean. I only felt pinpricks of chill on my cheeks.
You win, I said. Can we go back now before I get bronchitis?
He vaulted off the seesaw, landing in a puddle next to me.
Don't you love the rain?
He said. I gave a weak smile and he laughed. He grabbed me in a bear hug, lifted me and swung us both in a circle.
I give! I love the rain!
Andy let go of the hug, though we both leaned on each other to keep our balance.
Could we maybe just love it somewhere dry?
Almost finished, Andy said. June, 2 weeks after Andy called down the rain.
You were right. It's a good story.
Every once in a while I know what I'm talking about.
I need you to help me out.
I felt tight along the back of my shoulders. Andy's voice frightened me. His skin had developed large, red splotches. His father had been cutting his hair again. The cowlick on the right side of his crown sprouted wildly.
Take me to the beach?
It was somewhere between a whisper and a cry, urgent and breathless. Your dad won't.
Michael, please.
Andy threw the covers off. But that wasn't Andy's body lying there. It couldn't be. Pale and beginning to flab. That was my body. Andy was better than that.
Stay over. Then in the morning we can go early.
Andy, who was faster and smarter and stronger, tan and dark-haired, loved, popular, was pleading for my help. The last time that happened, we were 10, and I taught him to jump. Then I robbed him of it. All I ever did was drag Andy down. We left in the heavy gray of the next morning. Andy said he wanted to see the sunrise over the water. Neither of us acknowledged that the sun only set over the water at South Haven. The beach wasn't open. I parked. Then we hiked through the trees to avoid meeting anyone on the park driveway. The water rolled in from the horizon, dark and smooth. The lake froze my knees, but Andy plunged under the surface without a sound.
"You're crazy,"
I said when he resurfaced.
"I'll race you to the sandbar."
"Andy."
"Chicken?"
"The chicken gambit?"
I crossed my arms.
"You think I'd fall for that?"
Andy stood and shrugged, then walked back toward me.
"Hey, a guy's gotta..."
"Ready, set, go!"
I shouted, diving in and screaming underwater, thrashing my way toward the sandbar when I surfaced. I knew Andy would win anyway. At least he should have beaten me. But I stood first, shivering on the sandbar.
"Cheater,"
Andy panted when he got there. I slunk down to stay in the water out of the biting wind. "How else do I get to win?" I said. The sun peeked over the trees on the shore.
"Yellow flag day."
Andy pointed at the water. Compared to when we were 10, I didn't have to push off much at all to keep my head above the waves.
"Everything's bigger when you're a little kid,"
I said.
"No, it's not."
"Excuse me?"
"It's not because you're bigger," Andy said. "It's because you see less of the waves than you used to."
"That's what I said. When we were smaller, the waves looked bigger."
"Looking and seeing aren't the same thing," Andy said.
"That doesn't make any sense," I said.
Andy grabbed my face and turned it back out across the lake. I wanted his fingers to be warm, but his circulation hadn't been up to that for months.
"You never figured out how I jumped out of the waves in fourth grade, did you?"
"You're an athletic guy, and I'm a wimp."
Andy looked out across the lake. The water and I touched one another. I screwed up my face and broke his grip.
"Sure, Andy,"
I said, splashing around.
"There, I touched the water. So now can I?"
"You can,"
he said, "but not by thrashing around on the sandbar." Andy breathed deeply. "I'm not going to die, Michael." Water pooled in the flesh that sank between Andy's collarbone and shoulder blade.
"You keep listening to the wrong people,"
he said. "Letting the wrong things touch you. This, with my blood, it's not a medical condition. It's not something you cure." I shivered as the breeze caught on my own wet shoulders.
"My dad thinks he took me out of the mountains, away from the environment that could kill me. And I went and found another way to turn my blood hard. Like I have some instinct for all the wrong things, that I'm drawn to what hurts me most. But it's not about that. It's about passion. It builds up, and there's nothing or no one to pour it into. It's clogged up in me. That's what this..."
"Clogs? Andy, you make it sound like you need an enema."
He smiled, and I felt 10 again.
"I'm leaving," he said.
"Where?"
He pointed out to the lake.
"Andy?"
"Michael, I need this lake," he said. "The water knows me, wants to, does share everything with me. This is where my blood flows. Back there are only stairs and lectures and people who keep telling me not to be who I am. What reason is there to stay alone in bed, waiting?"
I opened my mouth, but my throat clamped down tight. In the distance, I heard a boat engine. A few seagulls gathered on the beach. Those things made sense. They were real, I told myself. If I said it, and he didn't say it back, had I made it all up? And if I made up what was sat unspoken between us, had I invented the rest too? If I just didn't say it, it was always possible. That wasn't better than real, but it was better than nothing. That's when he kissed me. His lips on mine were soft and desperate all at once. I couldn't tell the sound of the waves from the crash of blood in my ears. His hands at my shoulders were warmer than they had any right to be. I forgot how to breathe. He started out in the lake before I realized he'd let go. I hopped from the sandbar at the drop-off and tried to swim after him. I opened my mouth to call out his name, his real one, because that's the name you use when you tell someone you love him. But I couldn't remember his real name. I could still taste him on my lips, but couldn't find who he was anywhere in my mind. Only the stupid colonial steamroller I'd flattened him with. Two waves churned up, 10 feet apart, higher than something that called for a red flag. Andy swam into the first one and disappeared. The wave shot him out the top. Andy arched up into the background of the brightening sky. Drops of water sparkled as he spread his arms. Then he dove into the crest of the second wave. The water accepted him. It took back its long-suffering pupil, its best friend. The love whose name it surely knew. Then the waves were gone. So was Andy. I stand at the threshold to the basement. One more door, where the shadows lie. I flip on the lights and step through, my chest constricting. I have Mr. Grevier's schedule from the college. I've got 2 hours. Despite that, I avoid steps 3, rings for the elven kings under the sky, and 7, for the dwarf lords in their halls of stone. And I stay to the right on step 9, for mortal men doomed to die. Andy's room is a time capsule. His Xbox still has Bully in the drive. The Star Wars poster hangs just a little cockeyed in its plastic poster frame. The bedding is wrinkled. The only thing that's changed since the day we went to the beach is the not-so-thin layer of dust everywhere. The book's here, too. Laminated bookmark holding the page. Andy never read the last chapter. Andy's trophies still line the top shelf. I can see the small space off on the left edge where the missing one went. I found it in my car that morning after I came back from the beach. It was small compared to the state championship trophies. 3rd place. But the trophy was from Andy's first meet. I remember Andy's arms slashing through the water, legs pistoning behind. I kept the trophy. But that one, everyone, is engraved for Andy Grevier. I scrounge up my notebook and pen. I visit the lake every summer and swim out to the sandbar. I jump the waves, though they still pull me down at their crest. I try to touch the water to let it know what I've learned since last we met. Hope the water might say what I never could. To find Andy out there, somewhere, his blood pumping fast through his body. I looked you in the face, Mr. Grevier, and gave you a half-truth. That Andy went under and drowned. I gave that to you because I had nothing else. For you, anger was real. Anger for my failure to stop him. Or secretly anger because you suspected I knew exactly what Andy had planned. Believing the lie only required what the world already knew. Believing the truth depends on the word of a boy who thinks his best friend can call down the rain. I took your anger because I knew you could never be comforted with the truth I saw at the lake. I didn't help him die that day. For the first time since I stole his name, since I taught him to be what was expected instead of who he is, I was helping him to live. If I convinced him to stay in that bed, in our world, then I would have killed him. My memory catches as I pick up the book. Its cover has wrinkled across the title and curled in along the edges. The cloth has frayed. It means one thing. One ring to find. It means Andy was real. I lay my own story in its place, the last few pages handwritten. I slide my fingers into the pages and recognize the faded construction paper of the laminated bookmark. I still have one of my own, buried in a box of class souvenirs. Name bookmarks. from fourth grade homeroom. Before lunch. Before Andy. I open the book.
As I write this, Star Trek Discovery has just aired Despite Yourself, its mid-season finale. Spoilers follow, just a heads up. If you're not a dyed-in-the-wool Trekkie like yours truly, let me summarize for you. Discovery features a happily committed gay couple, Paul Stamets and Dr. Hugh Culber. In an intense scene, Dr. Culber is killed for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Fans were furious at Discovery seeming to resort to the long, shameful history of featuring a gay character only to kill them off, especially after having centered the couple in the season's plot and Discovery being the first time the franchise featured the gay characters in recurring roles and not just throwaway references like Star Trek Beyond Sulu having a husband. On first glance, that's an interpretation you could take with Jason's story. Gay male characters, tragic death, straight out of TV tropes. But like the Discovery showrunners promise us, there is so much more going on. Part of the reason this story is a personal favorite is because there are no clear-cut answers here for anyone. It would have been easy for this story to just impact on the surface. Boy meets boy, boy falls for boy, one boy dies, another boy goes on. But that's not the story Jason is telling here. This is not a kill your gays tragedy. Jason masterfully weaves complex threads of multiple identities, self, racial, social, sexual, giving us depth and context, and emphasizing that the tragedy of Andy's death is far more than his loss. It's also the isolation it causes to those in Andy's life. Rather than turning to each other for comfort or answers or even just sharing their grief, each take their own treasured piece of experience or knowledge about Andy's life and metastasize around it, hoarding them like Gollum and his ring. This rang truest for me when I reread this story, putting myself in Andy's father's shoes. We know extremely little about Mr. Graveri other than his anger. And why shouldn't he be mad? His son's death was 5 years ago, and in his eyes, it's unresolved. He doesn't truly know. Was it suicide? Was it Mike's fault somehow, be it homicide, assisting Andy's suicide, or even failing to stop him? Mike, the friend who, again, this is from Dad's perspective, aided in Andy giving up his name. And one presumes aspects of his cultural identity over the course of their long friendship. And who we, the audience, know lied to him at Andy's funeral. To say nothing of the guilt and remorse he must feel over his son suffering a medical condition that might have been caused by leaving Andy's birthplace. And that's before we even touch on Andy's own sexual identity and what his father may or may not have known about it. 5 years pass, and Mike calls out of the blue asking about a book? Imagine what that must have felt like! Unwelcome, rage-inducing, privileged, and ridiculous, and so very, very painful. We see Mike and Graveri's perspectives overlap on that phone call and violently repel each other. The pain and unresolved tension too much for either of them, prompting Mike to break into Graveri's house rather than interact with him again. We, the reader, know why. We know what drives Mike. Holding that book, we see him finally turn the corner with his grief. And once he does, as he starts to uncurl, only then is he able to try and leave a way for Graveri to perhaps someday follow. This isn't a hopeful story. For me, it's a story about finding hope and the will to persist and keep trying amidst a messy, multifaceted reality devoid of clear-cut answers or easy ways forward. I can't think of a stronger sentiment to summarize 2017. Join us next week when we resume new episodes. Cast of Wonders relies on your donations to pay our authors, our narrators, and our staff, and to bring you the best in young adult audio fiction week after week. If you've enjoyed the stories, please consider making a donation. We have options on our website, including Patreon and PayPal. Every one-time donation, or better yet, a recurring monthly subscription, makes all the difference, and it earns you our heartfelt thanks. You can share your appreciation for the story and for us by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Share the episode with your friends, family, and coworkers, or discuss it on the EA forum, forum.escapeartists.net. We're at Cast of Wonders on Twitter. Come say hello. Cast of Wonders is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is brought to you by the 2018 creative team of assistant editor Catherine Inskip, associate editors Tanya Bespalko, Amy Brennan, Alicia Caprosaro, Alexis Goebel, Trace Fontiel, Will Hate Minor, Andrew Ho, Ray O, Sean Proctor, Susie Rodriguez, Carissa Sluss, Emma Smales, and Chris Tang. Our community manager, Danny Daly, audio producer, Jeremy Carter, and I remain your humble editor and host, Marguerite Kenner. Cast of Wonders episodes are released under the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivatives 4.0 International License. That means episodes are free to download and listen to on any device or service, but they can't be altered or sold. Our theme music is Appeal to Heavens by Alexei Nov, which is available from Promo DJ or his Facebook page, which we'll link in the show notes. Thanks for listening.